Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, Dave Solomon, thank you so much. I wish I could just put my hands around that man and squeeze him tight. He has just been one of the best friends ever in Philly and one of the best radio voices ever as well. Our friendship goes back to 1976. Well, that's when I started radio, and I'm telling you what, one of the people that knows more than most of my friends what radio is all about is on the line with me. Normally, we would have Daoud Saeed, our intro music, in the background, but I just didn't want to fight for any attention because Jerry B is going to be with me for the duration of the show today. And let me tell you something, I could not think of a more fitting holiday partner than the one, the only CEO, ordained minister, drummer, producer, composer, arranger. I'm getting out of breath here, Jerry B.
I'd like to meet that guy for real. Really.
Yeah, me too. Look, if you run into him, give him a call. Tell him to call me, all right?
I'll text him.
How are you, Shug?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Look, since you asked, last night was the big night at the Big Easy in town, okay?
I got that on my Facebook page.
You did. So,
yeah.
Folks ordinarily are not going to understand this because not everybody has these circumstances. But back in the day, I was married to Michael Redmond for a brief time, 1979 to 1982, thereabouts. He and I divorced, and he then married Kim. They divorced. Michael's on wife number three in San Diego. He works for the same company we used to work for, Jerry B.
Would that be with two C's?
That is correctamundo.
Okay.
So now Kim is living in California, has a great job. She came into town from California, and to make this long story short, we had a blast last night. She sang Woman Be Wise at the Jam last night. I sang Santa Baby, and I stayed with her at the hotel last night, so I just got in an hour or so ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey,
wow.
You know what? It's the holiday season. You have to do things spontaneously.
Absolutely. It sounded spontaneous. Now, I don't want to make a long story shorter or longer, so to speak, but how did you guys strike up the relationship knowing that you were both ex-wives of the same man? I'm just curious about that.
Okay. This is where it gets to be a lifetime movie.
There you go.
Okay. Because back in 2002, when T and I separated from Dad, we moved into my mom's house in Philly, and I decided to join Match.com.
Uh-huh.
I had a date with someone who came from the Eastern Shore to have lunch with me, and I found out that this gentleman was a former roommate of my ex-husband.
Boy, the world is too small.
I know it. And knew Kim very well, so Tim is responsible. Tim and I quickly discovered we were best suited as friends. We discovered how much we had in common, and he got Kim and I together. Isn't that cool?
That's excellent, and that's an interesting way the world works. You know, a lot of people would think, oh, this is so, I would never, relationships are meant to be healed, and it sounds like you've moved through a time of healing.
Well, it's all God's timing, and now Kim and I love each other more than we ever did him.
That's excellent.
Isn't that cool? And listen, do you hear that clicking thing in the background?
I do, just a little bit, though.
Oh, Okay. I don't know what that is. That's never happened before, but that's okay. Listen, we've got a lot of music to cover. You are good. Sound Doctrine's okay?
Sound Doctrine is doing excellent. In fact, we're just editing the blog. We're moving from the newsletters I used to write, you know, those long newsletters, to video logs. So just finishing up with the end of the year, so to speak, editing that, and that should go out tomorrow to our subscribers, and the band is doing excellent.
Oh, that's really cool to hear because, man, you know, you were just on Cool Jazz Conversations the other day, and that's right, and Joy and you and I were talking about Christmas music, and I had not heard Sound Doctrine Christmas music. Now, we've got one selection that's coming up. I'm going to play three songs, but I wanted to start out with this Christmas for the show, if that's okay with you.
That's brilliant.
Now, tell me when you recorded this, because I love this. It gives such a live feel, and of course it was live when it was recorded.
That's right. It was several years ago back at Borders Books and Music when they were really thriving. We were on what was called the Borders Blitz, and we went through 13 stores. You know, it was the Christmas season, and Cliff Barnes, who was music director at the time, said, "Hey, guys, follow me." You know, this was stuff that was unrehearsed, and we just kind of picked up on it, and somebody decided to bring a recorder, and there you go.
That's awesome. And gosh, this Christmas, I don't know about you, but I know it's the holiday season when I hear Donny Hathaway sing this song, but when somebody does it, and you can feel the vibe of how special this song is, it really means everything. So we're going to play this. I'll meet you on the other side, Jerry B. We're going to play a few songs. And, matter of fact, the songs that you'll hear right after Sound Doctrine are two of the ones that you said that you wanted to hear today.
Awesome. Hey, shake a hand, right?
What's that?
I said shake a hand, right? That's Donnie.
Shake a hand, shake a hand. Yes. I like that so much. God bless him. All right, here we go. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, and we're starting off the show with This Christmas, Sound Doctrine. Woohoo! Man, that is so cool. And I have to thank my co-host today, Jerry B., for turning me on to the compilation from which that comes. We heard two tracks from Jazz to the World, which was released, I believe, in the mid-90s. It definitely was to benefit Special Olympics. And Jerry B. is with me. Jerry, those two songs are so breathtaking, aren't they?
Hey, they're absolutely fabulous.
Oh my God, Cassandra Wilson, her take on Little Drummer Boy, and a group that I was not familiar with. And Jerry, I did research on the group. I'm not sure you know how much about Steps Ahead.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
Man, I mean, the different kinds of folks that were part of that group from the 70s.
Oh yeah. Steps Ahead is legendary, and their take on Angels We Have Heard on High, I mean, come on, that is by far the best version that I've ever heard, because they do not negate their fusion steps. They don't back away from that at all, and they just bring they keep the holiness intact while exploring.
Right. And it's so ironic that we would play that today, and I'll tell you why, because in doing the research and knowing that Mike Manieri, or I guess Manieri, was the guy who formulated the idea for the group. They were doing their thing part-time, playing 7th Avenue South, a New York City club, back in the 70s. Their worldwide debut was in 1983. And the personnel that has been in the group, I don't think that they're still together, but through the years, Michael Brecker was part of this establishment. Mike was doing his thing on vibraphone on that song, and he was astounding. Interestingly, Jerry, last night, I don't know if you know the name, but I sure do. He was part of Steps Ahead, and he came to the Big Easy where we were last night, Dennis Chambers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did he play?
Did he perform?
Did he perform?
No. See, here's the thing. This is so wild. Dennis apparently lives down the street, and he is frequent to the Big Easy. Sometimes he plays, sometimes he doesn't. I know that he's usually the drummer for Santana. He's the person who introduced Carlos to Cindy, because Cindy Blackman was going to fill in for Dennis.
Wow.
And now Cindy and Carlos are man and wife.
Right.
So, isn't that cool? So Dennis was there last night, and then I read that he is, I mean, Dennis has been a part of so many different kinds of combinations through the years. He's amazing. If anybody can make David Letterman speechless, which Dennis did when he did a drum solo a couple of months ago on the show,
yeah,
you're saying so. Yes. That's saying so.
Honestly, he's a single stroke king too. No, you know what I mean? And just the power of his foot, forget about it. Done.
You know what? That rat-a-tat-tat is still there. Now, it's not loud for you, right?
No, I can't hear it at all anymore. I'm sorry that you can. It's totally disappeared for me, at least.
I can't even begin to tell you how loud that is for me, and I sure hope anybody in the chat room or anybody that's listening isn't getting that, but on this phone, and this has never happened, so that's pretty wild, Jerry. It's just the devil trying to take away any joy for the holiday season. That's what it is.
Well, he can't do it. He can't have it.
No, he can't.
He can't have it. It might be a technical glitch, and we might be blaming him. Possibly, but if he is doing something he can't have it, it's going to die out.
That's right. So, that's right. Well, and the chat room, by the way, is lively. I just see that Griselda said that it's coming through.
Oh, is it?
Now, this might be a Blog Talk Radio scenario. I'm not sure.
Wow.
But it's not happening.
You know, what I've done is I've turned off my monitor to you, so I'm just talking to you, you know, one way.
Right.
So I can't hear anything coming back to me, or it'll be, you know, a couple seconds delayed. So.
Oh, okay. Well, it's got something to do with the microphone mechanism, because when we're playing the songs, it's not there.
Yeah, it has to be, I guess.
Yeah.
Now I hear it. Now, why is that?
I don't know.
I hear you.
Wow. Yeah, isn't that wild? Well, you know what? We'll just proceed, and maybe it's one of those glitches, because we had something like this happen on Cool Jazz Conversations the other night, right?
Absolutely. Maybe it's me, Trish.
No, because you were on with me a couple of times co-hosting, and we didn't have this problem. Now things are a little quiet, see?
That's great.
Yeah, that's cool.
Cool.
Well,
And
it's going to be okay no matter what, because Joyce is coming up next hour, and you know, of course, why Joyce is coming on the show at this late date, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. It's really critical that we address the situation of mental health challenges and mental health period during the holiday season. Honestly, I ran across a couple of people last night at the Big Easy, and just talking to them, and you could just tell that the holiday season was weighing heavily on them.
Yeah.
And it's one of these situations where people don't know where to go to get help. And sometimes people won't even go there to get help. But at least we'll have Joyce talking to us about how she has come to learn about her organizations. Because, you know, Jerry, her brother, has been diagnosed for a long time as mentally ill. Did you know that?
Yes, I do. And yeah. Alpha Norco book with NAMI, I think it's pronounced the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
That's
so,
right.
She is definitely a formidable proponent of striking a chord for mental illness, and we applaud her work for it.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that 100% of the proceeds for her Christmas song, which is just so cool, Feeling Just Like Christmas, is not only going to go to NAMI, that's also going to go to something, another organization called the Fellowship for Health Resources. So she's going to talk to us about that. And we have a little surprise for her. She does not know that there is a song that she really loves this time of year that we're going to play for her while she's on the air with us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, that's a surprise for me because I don't even know that.
Well, and actually you're going to get surprised, as are the people who are listening today, because there is another song that we're going to play, but we won't say a word. I'm going to play two songs now because they're just going to be cool back-to-back, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. And again, I have to say, God bless you, because there are so many jazz compilations out there, but I didn't know that there are, what, 15, 16 tracks all told to Jazz to the World that was released back in the 90s. You had said that you loved another track on here by Foreplay, and I love it too.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
gosh.
Foreplay, awesome stuff. Yeah, so everybody should just download Jazz to the World today. My brother-in-law, actually, Phil the Beat, turned me on to this CD about 4 years ago, and it's one of my favorite CDs to play because it covers all of the grounds of jazz, and Foreplay is no doubt right on point.
Foreplay, you know, I don't know what the plans are for 2012, but at this particular juncture, they were cooking on all cylinders, and this is one of the coolest versions because we have heard countless in our lifetime. This is It Came Upon a Midnight Clear on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy and my co-host today, Jerry B. Thank you, Jerry, for this song. Man, this is cool.
Thank you.
That is so beautiful. Oh, my gosh. I had to play that song a few days before Christmas because that's from a very tasty CD from several years ago called Smooth Yule. That is Kitaro and Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. Jerry B., did you like that?
I loved it.
So beautiful. My gosh. This man...
I need a cup of cocoa. You know, you hear that. You need cocoa.
Right. Woo! Meanwhile, it's like it's 60s today in Baltimore. How's the weather there?
Oh, my goodness. We're at like 44 degrees, 45. It's brisk?
Well, I'm not sure what's happening in Maryland. It feels like spring here. Wow. I'll have to get Al Gore on the phone and tell him he was right.
No, it felt like spring yesterday, and we had a few spring showers here, and even almost a near thunderstorm. So, and then today
wow.
It was brisk morning. What do you make of that? Global warming, but Joyce, her, you know, she has global cooling. So, you know,
yes. So cool of you to pick up on that.
Oh yeah. So we'll ask her, you know, what's her take on the weather, you know?
Well, where she is, San Francisco, I would only imagine that it's kind of balmy, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. My business partner, Jerry Thompson, just returned from Florida. So, you know, I denoted the next 48 hours, I'm not even going to talk to him. You know what I'm saying?
Well, listen, now that you mentioned it, I'm having a conversation with William T., and he says he wants you to know that the good Jerry, the nice Jerry, says hello.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, okay. That's a very, very inside joke, and I wish I knew who William Tate was. William, it sounds like he's masking his name somehow.
Well... You know, some of the time when we have guests come into the chat room, they're not clearly marked. It just says guest with a number. And then there are some folks that choose to have a name. I'm not saying the last name because I want to protect privacy, but William T. is the person who said...
Oh, William T. I thought you said William Tate. Okay, I know exactly what's going on now.
Okay.
And, keep my comments off air.
Well, I just wanted to let you know a little bit about Kitaro because I thought you would be fascinated by this. Check this out. You know, Kitaro has been selling millions of CDs and has had a 30-year career. And he was born in, this is where he was born. This is so cool. The Toyohashi Aichi Ken Prefecture of Japan.
Wow.
Yes, and he has a home there, but he lives pretty much on an 80-acre compound in Boulder, Colorado.
Wow.
And it's enough to house a 70-piece orchestra that he calls mochi, which is also known as rice cake.
And he
isn't that crazy?
That is wild.
And then he goes back each year in August to Japan because he has a taiko drum marathon that he does during the August moon. He is a fascinating creature.
Yeah, I have to read up more on Kitaro. You know, I was very aware of his music, but, you know, to say that... I've gone into deep research. That's one musician that I need to dig deeper into.
Yeah, he's it's ambient music or new age if you prefer mostly, but he is so passionate. There are some artists, you know, maybe they do it because it's a way for them to make money, but his culture dictates that it's consuming for him to make music that creates peace in the world. It's beautiful. Yes. And Jerry B, we have a caller here, And I believe the caller wants to extend some happy holiday wishes.
All right.
Should we go to the phone?
Absolutely.
All right. 210 area code. Enter and sign in, please. Hello.
Hey, sister friend. Hey, Jerry B.
Griselda.
Hey.
Griselda.
I'm on my computer. It just completely froze, and there's no sound. So, like, you forget I'm calling so I can hear the show, if nothing else.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Listen, Jerry B.
I didn't want to miss it.
Here's what we're going to do. We have to do this for Griselda in 2012. We have to both pray really hard and make sure that we agree in prayer that she gets a new desktop computer, okay?
Absolutely. We'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. I need all the prayers I can get.
Yeah, this girl has been suffering enough.
Absolutely. And here's a little blessing tip that I've learned. When I've had a really, really bad need in my life, if I sowed into someone else, it seems like my need was furnished a little sooner.
Okay.
There's a sermon in that I'm trying to stay out of, but if you have a need, Griselda, and you need a desktop computer, find a need and sow into that and see how God opens up for you.
Okay.
Work.
Okay.
It's not just... This is not hocus pocus or, you know, genie type stuff. It really is the law of sowing and harvesting. Check it out.
Absolutely. Will do.
I love it. Yes. Oh, my gosh. I know that I've seen you in the chat room going back and forth, logging in, logging out, and it's not because you're wanting to. It's because that's what's happening.
Exactly. So I'm just like, okay, forget the computer for the rest of the day today. I'm giving it a break.
Aw, golly. Well, if you hang on the phone with us, is that the way you'll hear the
that's
show?
That's fine. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do because I missed, barely started where and got into Yezu Joy of Man's Design, which I love, and then completely went and froze. I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. So I was like, okay, I'm calling in. And just going to listen, if nothing else, you know, that way I won't miss the show.
Well, actually, Jerry, I have to say that since Griselda has called, the little stuff that we've been hearing on the phone has decreased.
Maybe it was her computer.
You know what?
It's my computer's fault. I'll take the blame.
Because, honestly, she just wrote back and forth in the chat room earlier saying, what is up with the chat room today? I said, nothing's up with the chat room. It's your computer.
So there you go. You know?
There it goes. See, I saw the problem.
Oh, my gosh. Well, look. God just sent you to us at that perfect time to sort of quiet things down, which is great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, now, here's the thing. Jerry B., we want to make sure that we touch on this because you are not only the head, the founder of Sound Doctrine, which is this amazing group. Oh, my gosh. Folks, you need to go to sounddoctrine.com. And check out the music because this group does things with jazz and fusion and soul, and it comes out to be this beautiful product that you know everybody just loved at the time they were doing it in a recorded atmosphere. But Jerry B. is also the head of a roster of talent that is mind-blowing. And we're about to hear Philip K. Jones II. So, Jerry, you want to tell us about Philip?
Yeah, Philip is from Cleveland, Ohio. He is a multi-instrumentalist. I believe you're going to play Clark and Oriental Sing, I believe.
Yep.
Most of the instruments that you hear, Philip plays them. Now, you know, I mean, that's kind of commonplace with computers and whatnot, but he's not using any of that. He records the drums, he goes back over it, records the bass, the keyboards, and whatnot. And where there are horn instruments, he doesn't play a wind instrument, so he has some of his friends come in and lay down those tracks. But Philip is incredible. Go to niayana.com and learn more. We actually have some Christmas tracks up that you can download for free through the end of the year. So if you
wow. Well, you know what? And let's spell that out. It's N as in Nancy, I-Y-A-N-A.
Almost. It's N as in Nancy, I as
okay.
in ice cream, A. So Nia, N-I-A-Y-A-N-A.
Oh, I thought I said that. Nia Yana. Okay.
That's right. That's right.
Cool. Okay. I know how to pronounce it. I just didn't spell it because I'm being blonde today. I'm sorry. Okay.
You want to find out about Alan?
Look, you know what? If you had been there last night, you would be so proud that I am handling myself correctly today.
You're a professional, Trish. You are a professional.
You know what? By golly, I'll receive that, Jerry B. Thank you so much. This is
Matt.
God bless you. Philip K. Jones II has this amazing CD. I have had this for a while. This is The Meaning of Christmas, and I love to play this during the holiday season because, man, if you want Christmas and not just happy holidays, you're going to get it, by golly. I love it. And not to take anything away from folks who say, happy holidays. That's sweet.
Yeah, I'm going to reserve my comments, too, for off-air. But Merry Christmas, everyone,
right.
is my greeting.
Right. And as somebody said today on Facebook, how did she put it? This is Deborah from D.C., a fellow Temple Owl who went to school there in Philadelphia. She said, happy Christmaka Kwanzaa. So we're going to put in Kwanzaa. We're going to put in Hanukkah. For those of us who have some Israeli blood coursing through our bloodstream, all of it, let's just get it out there. But for those of us who are just gung-ho on this, Merry Christmas, y'all.
Merry Christmas.
There you go.
Merry Christmas.
There you go. Thank you, Griselda. Philip K. Jones II, Hark the Herald Angels Sing on Hyper Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woohoo!
He is the Lord and He shall see.
just have to say, that just takes your breath away. And, man, it's just what Christmas is all about right there. Philip K. Jones II, who is great friends with Jerry B., who's with me, my co-host today. And I was going to play Joyce Cooling's song, but I think I'll wait, just because I see that efficient as she is all the time, she has called in early. So, Jerry B., if it's okay with you, I'm going to make sure that Joyce gets on the show with us. And Griselda, now you'll have a chance to say hello to Joyce Cooling, one of the coolest people on the planet for a myriad of reasons. And I could go on and on, but I will tell you this. One of the reasons why I love Joyce so much is not only because she is a premier guitarist in the world of contemporary jazz, and she does it with heart and soul. And not only is she an amazing advocate for those who are in duress as far as mental illness is concerned and making sure that people stay mentally well, but let me tell you something. Her staff defines customer service. And this is Jean Hennessy's daughter talking now, who spent 45 years in customer service in Philadelphia Electric. Customer service is so important, no matter what line of business you do. Joyce Cooling, you are the bomb!
Woo-hoo! Good gracious, Trish.
You know what?
How am I going to live up to all that?
You are. You do, and you do every day. And Joyce, I know it's going to get a little crowded and congested in this scenario today. We've got Jerry B. from Sound Doctrine on one phone. Say hello, Jerry B.
Hello, Joyce. How are you?
I am just fine, Jerry. How are you?
Always excellent.
That's what I'd like to hear.
And, Joyce, we also have a huge fan who is a huge supporter of all things jazz and a huge supporter of the show, who has to listen via phone today because her computer's not working. This is Griselda Medina.
Hi, Griselda. I talked to you on Facebook.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi.
Yes.
I hear you, Griselda, from Facebook. I finally get to hear your voice. How you doing?
Good. I remember meeting you about 2 years ago in San Antonio when you had an interview with David Munoz.
Oh, my God. You know what? Yes, I do. I do. And that was a NAMI benefit.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was. You know what?
Yeah, because you had a show the night before, but I missed it. But luckily you came in for his anniversary just to do the interview, and you said hello to Slim Man. And I'm like, I was just like, she looks familiar, why? And it didn't click on me, and I'm like, oh, it's Joyce Cooling. And then that's when I went to approach you. I think you were with your manager. And we started, Trish, we started talking. She started talking to me like if she'd known me for years. And then she said to her manager, she's like, hey, doesn't she look like one of my cousins? She looks like she, you know, belongs at our dinner table, you know, with the family. And it was so sweet. I'll never forget that. Thank you.
Griselda, thank you. I mean, thank you for you know, remembering all of that. And, you know, it's funny. We just spoke the other day about coming back to San Antonio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you guys have a series there throughout the summer, right? Don't you do
the
station? Yeah, and David Munoz.
Yeah.
Yeah, David Munoz just gave a shout. We keep up as pals as well, he and his wife,
right,
Betty. And we were just chatting about coming in and doing something for their summer series.
La Conicites or the La Cantera?
There are two, he said. So
yes.
I'm not sure. You would know the two series there, Griselda.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's either the Balcones Heights Summer Jazz Fest or La Cantera, the Shops of La Cantera.
He mentioned two. So, you know, which
okay.
two specifically, I don't know. So we're going to talk later in the
fabulous.
Year and see what we can do.
Yeah,
so it'd be great to see you.
So
it'll be great to see
you
too.
You know what? Then I'm getting the wind, Joyce, that from our other conversation that we had on Cool Jazz Conversations, you are going to be doing your thing on the road a lot more in 2012, correct?
Well, you know what, Trish, I wouldn't say a lot more. What this is what we told David, and we were chatting about it, was We probably won't make the summer, but the fall is sounding good.
Okay.
You know? So there
Great.
You go. So much of 2012 will be spent finishing these projects that are taking way longer than anyone expected. And that's just how it goes. We all know, whatever project it is, large project you have, whether it's, you know, painting your apartment or doing something, you know, fixing something or making music, it always takes longer than you think.
Well, that's because of you, Joyce. Honestly, you never do anything that is, excuse the expression, half-arsed.
I thought you were going to say half-baked.
Okay, that too. As long as we're talking Christmas cookies, okay, half-baked. You never do anything unless it's done. It's not to say that you're to the wall of perfectionist.
Yes,
it's
I am.
Just,
oh, go
okay.
ahead and say it. Oh, I am.
All right.
I am, Trish. You got my number. Totally got my number.
I put it out there so you could defend it or not, but all right, since you said it. Look, good things are worth waiting for. This is going to be a fabulous scenario for us who love ear candy in 2012.
Well, thank you. Good. That's how I'll look at it, because you know how you can spin every scenario several ways? Things are multifaceted, so you can spin it like, okay, good things are worth waiting for, or you can, adopt the other, like, do it. You know, there are all ways to look at it. So I'll adopt your policy there, because it makes me look better.
Look, at this point in your career, people love the work that you turn out. Of course, they don't perceive it as work. You do, because you're putting blood, sweat, and tears into it. But the music that has consistently been turning out from your camp has been so strong that people don't mind waiting. It's just that they know that once it's in their hands or once it's in their ears, whether it's going to be hard copy or, you know, via online, if they buy it from there, it's going to be absolutely fabulous. So, hey.
I'm counting on you being right, Trish.
Look, when it comes to great music, I frequently am right, and you are one of the greats.
Thanks.
Matter of fact, Griselda had mentioned meeting you. Do you realize, Joyce, that since our conversation with Joy, several days ago on Cool Jazz Conversations, there have been so many people who have talked about meeting you and said exactly what Griselda said, that it's just like somebody that you pick up a conversation with you haven't seen for years, an old friend. That means everything to people.
Well, I'm going to get downright corny right now. Can I get warm and fuzzy and corny?
Oh, please, go ahead.
But absolutely truthful, really, to all of you. And Griselda, you too. Philip, you know, really, it's if somebody spends their hard-earned money to either pick up one of your CDs or come to one of your concerts or takes time out of their busy, busy day to come hear you play or whatever, to search out your music, I am on bended knee to that person. I'm very honored, and that is very heartfelt. It's really, and I know everybody says this and gives lip service to it, but I mean it very deeply. That's the deal. That's why we do this. That's, you know, I can't explain it anymore. That's
well,
it.
And,
I'm
and
very
Jerry,
grateful.
You know, Jerry co-hosts with me some of the time, and I'm glad that he was with me today, because sometimes it can get too estrogen laden, and we need this male voice sometimes.
Yeah, Jerry, we need you to ground our estrogen with a little testosterone there.
Well, and he has an abundance. Let me tell you, he's multifunctional, because he's not only the drummer and the founder of this extraordinary group, Sound Doctrine, that blends all sorts of jazz together, but he's also the CEO of his own company, and he's responsible for a roster of talent. Jerry, that resonates with you, doesn't it, what Joyce just said?
Oh, without fail. I mean, you know, we make it a priority to make sure that once the gig is over, we're out in the audience. You know, it's not about tearing down equipment or anything. It's, hey, you guys have taken your time out to come and hang out with us, so we're going to hang out with you. I mean, you know, it's more than important, and I think Joyce put it very well, because it's so heartfelt. I mean, you have honored us by encouraging us, not only with your presence, but you've purchased our music, and you're here. So why not just make it a relationship, make it more than a show. So I'm loving it. You said it very well.
The audience feels like an old friend, right?
That's exactly what it should be. And I think, and I'm grateful for, you know, some of the changes that has happened in the industry where, you know, the star, if we're going to use that word, the star, the artist, the performer, was somewhat untouchable. But, you know, now with the breakdown and more independent me to you, you know, the man is left out. I can come and I can be your friend and you can hang out with me and you know things about me that I didn't think you know. It's really good just to form those relationships. It's brilliant.
It's and the audience, sometimes I said they feel like an old friend, and many of them are.
Yes.
You know, you just mentioned, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we come to San Antonio, and some people, it will blow my mind sometimes, and I think, Trish, we spoke about this with Joy, where someone will phone in or write in or email or whatever, and they'll say, or they'll just jump on our website, and they'll say something like, oh, I saw you in the 80s before any record was put out, and I used to come to the club on the corner of da-da-da-da-da. And tell me that's not an old friend.
Oh, wow.
You know? So
yeah.
It really is a long relationship. And I said recently, I hope we can all grow old and gray together. You know, that's what I'm planning on.
Well, so, you go ahead, Jerry, because I know you relate to this so much.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we're opening up Christmas cards now, and Sound Doctrine will celebrate 10 years in January, and I'm getting Christmas cards from people who came to our first show 10 years ago, and I'm still getting cards.
Oh, man.
Relationship.
Yeah, that's 10 years. That's a decade. That's an old friend.
Yeah,
and you know what? Besides which, whether it's an old friend or somebody new in the scene, what is so miraculous to me, it's like when you as performers, when you spark in someone a chemical reaction to make that person go, oh, my gosh, I just have to see Joyce. I just have to go to see her. I love this song so much. It's my song. It's like falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To have that kind of bond.
Oh, absolutely. And Philip, I'm sure you can relate to this. You're a musician, but you're also a fan. I'm a fan, an avid fan of so many musicians where I'm the one in the audience. I'm the one buying the CDs, buying the concert tickets. I'm an active music consumer as well as a performer. And Philip, are you as well?
I am. I'm Jerry, but yeah.
Why do I keep saying Philip?
Joyce, that's completely understandable, because I just played Philip K. Jones. It's okay.
You want to know what I did? Seriously, I wrote that down. I wrote down Philip K. Jones II because I was a fan. I loved that track so much.
Oh, cool.
I said, who is that? So now I'm going to go download it and buy it. I'm going to go purchase it. So I wrote that down, and I know you're Jerry, but I'm looking at the note I wrote, Philip K. Jones II. Jerry, forgive me.
George Clinton. No, not at all. George
Clinton. I'm
turning
Clinton
that
used to over say, right now.
don't erase it. I mean, George Clinton used to say, when the brides have a hit, I'm a bride. When Bootsy's Rubber Band has a hit, hey, I'm a part of Bootsy. So, yeah.
So, Jerry, that's where the Philip came from. You're absolutely right. I'm sitting there looking at my own stupid note.
And
I'm going to go purchase that. What a fabulous track.
Joyce, if you're going to buy it, you can call in Seymour if you want.
There you go.
Should we break into Suddenly Seymour now or what?
Oh, my gosh. See, this is the whole point. I mean, if we knew that the people that we loved and even the people that we didn't really like a whole lot were laughing this holiday season, we wouldn't have to talk about the reason why Joyce carved out an hour of her time today to talk to us. This is so critical. We're 3 days away from Christmas and then New Year's, and I'm not sure which is more of a tricky scenario for folks, seeing all these images on TV of togetherness during the holiday, the big, big Christmas holiday, or starting a new year feeling alone again. But Joyce Cooling is here today so that we can make sure that folks know that there are resources available to you so you don't have to feel alone if you choose not to do so.
Exactly. And you put it beautifully, Trish. There's such a wind-up and a big, you know, like, my goodness, we're seeing talk and sights of Christmas before it's Halloween yet.
So yeah.
Big build-up, big build-up. And if you're struggling with mental illness or really, really struggling with anything that leaves you alone, you feel extra alone.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not connected to people in some way. And many times mental illness is alienating. People don't understand it. They're afraid of it. There's a lot of stigma around mental illness, and people straight-arm people struggling with it. And it is by far the most misunderstood disease in healthcare. It's the most misunderstood one out there because it affects behavior. People often will think, well, you know, this person isn't doing this because, you know, they're weak character, and we spoke about this, or poor parenting, or, you know, come on, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, people think that it's a character flaw rather than a physical disease, a bodily disease. It's a disease of the brain. And so
right.
These people get cast aside. And many, many, I don't know what your situation is where you guys are, either in, you know, you're back east or in San Antonio or Baltimore, but there are a lot of homeless people here in San Francisco. One, because it's lenient to the indigent, which I'm happy about that. But many, many of them are not like bums that don't want to work. They have mental illness.
Yeah.
They don't have anyone to, you know, their families either are gone or have abandoned them. Many families abandon their mentally ill siblings or children or whatever. And they're out on the streets and they're homeless. And talk about alone, you know. They have their own little camps, but, you know, it's not like happy holiday ring-a-ling time, you know.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, Griselda's in Texas. Jerry is in Ohio. Mm. And in Baltimore, I mean, we all have our stories. I know Brian O'Neill could fill your head with what he has found being an activist in Detroit. Can you imagine Detroit?
I know. They got hit hard with the recession, as many areas did. And so we're seeing a lot of that. And one of the most misunderstood facets of mental health or mental illness is depression. It's underestimated because we all get a little blue sometimes. We all get a little down. I'm talking about clinical depression where you can't get out of bed. You can't open the windows. You can't. And people think, oh, you know, quit being lazy. Just stand up and go do it. You know, it's not like that. For someone struggling with severe depression, they can't just get out of bed. It's not about that. So they often are alone, and they don't want to see people. That's part of the disease sometimes, where they shut people out. So there's a lot of – the holidays are poignant. They're fun, and I'm having a ball, and I'm glad. But I know many, many folks out there, it's a very difficult time for them.
And, Joyce, you know what? I'm going to get really intense with this because this is – yeah. Honestly, in the past, actually, 24 hours, this has come into my mind, and I can't shake it. I saw somebody last night out and about, and my heart bleeds for this man. He's one of those – thousands of people across America and even beyond. I don't know what they do in other cultures, but I know in the States there are people who are walking around not diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Oh, no doubt. Millions, yes.
Right. So sometimes with that scenario, many times actually, somebody doesn't have the wherewithal, the presence of mind, the rationale to go and seek help for himself or herself.
Right.
What does one do? I mean, we can't have the authority. We don't have the right to intervene. So what can we do?
Well, Trish, you know, that's a hard one.
Yeah.
Just they need to know that someone is there. We spoke about this last time with Joy, too. NAMI, N-A-M-I, which stands for National Alliance on Mental Illness, there are different chapters. They have 24-hour hotlines all around the, you know, all around the country.
I love
there's
that.
A NAMI affiliate in every single state in the union here. And also Fellowship Health Resources is, they're mostly on the East Coast right now, but boy, they are growing exponentially. They just opened a new one in New Jersey, so they're getting further and further south. They have one in Virginia.
Oh,
and
good.
Fellowship Health Resources, FHR, I love these guys. They're amazing. I've been working with them closely on a couple things. We did a video together. We're talking about doing some more things together. They are hands-on. They have drop-in centers, all kinds of things. I know in Orlando, Florida, there's a whole series called Pathways, and they have drop-in centers that are 24/7 where people can just come in if they're just feeling, you know, like they need help.
That's great.
There's also your regular hospital, but I have to be honest with you, NAMI, Fellowship Health Resources, Pathways, these guys all specialize in mental health. And a lot of times even mental health is so misunderstood and there's so much ignorance about it. And rightfully so, I would be ignorant about it if I didn't have a brother with schizophrenia. I wouldn't know. We don't talk about it, you know, as a society.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it. But even, for example, the law, many times if someone is disruptive, doesn't always mean that they're a criminal. If
that's right.
Having an outburst, you know, from a mental illness perspective, they need to have people who are trained in dealing with someone perhaps having a psychotic break or having a psychotic episode. They're not to be, like, handcuffed and thrown in jail. They need help, and they may need restraint or whatever, but they're not a criminal. And so when I say the hospital, I have to kind of hopefully that they'll have a mental health division, someone who will recognize what the person is going through. That's why I'm a big advocate of NAMI, Fellowship Health Resources, Pathways, those kinds of places that really have made it their life's work to deal with mental illness and mental health.
And come to think of it, you know what, Joyce, you raise an interesting thought that just kind of networks with other thoughts. With the epidemic now of those who have been diagnosed with autism,
huge
part of the umbrella of autism is sometimes and sometimes frequently and sometimes severe behavior.
Yeah.
And we as a society have to closely look at the rules that have pertained heretofore to all citizens. It can't be that way anymore because people's lives are in jeopardy, not only physical lives but emotional lives. We know because T has had this experience, of course, being diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, but we have a friend in Pennsylvania, and we were just talking about this the other day. We can't believe that this young man actually went through this, but this same age as T, 19, he was in his high school a couple of years ago, and he, because of his diagnosis, did something that was against the rules of the high school. They put him in jail.
Yeah, I know. And when you say severe behavior, sometimes it is severe, but the one thing I do want to get out there is Hollywood has done a really good or bad, depending how you look at it, way of portraying especially psychotic illnesses like schizophrenia and paranoia, you know, things like that. Usually, almost the vast majority of times, these people are only dangerous to themselves.
Yeah.
They don't go, they're not serial killers. They don't go, Hollywood has really done a lot to reverse and keep mental health into the dark ages, because it plays on people's fears and it sells box office tickets, you know.
Oh yeah.
I can't say all, because A Beautiful Mind was a great movie that really portrayed what was going on, tried to give a more realistic view rather than, you know, the serial killer, you know, the mentally ill serial killer. I mean, that is so off. It's just off. It's just not so. You know, and many people, and understandably, again, I have to say this, I'm not calling anybody stupid, or because I wouldn't know if we didn't have mental illness in my family, I wouldn't know what this was, what psychotic behavior was. And I would, you know, and it can be frightening if you see someone going through a psychotic episode, but usually, most of the time, it's just not at all a threat to anyone but themselves. So I just wanted to make that clear and sort of try to break down that stigma that Hollywood has really built up.
Oh, yeah. They have pushed the envelope, and yes, for the sensational aspect of it, because they know that people will buy tickets if it's like, gosh, the first example I think of is a highway accident.
Oh,
people,
right.
And their gaper delays because they have to see the accident. You know, they have to see it.
Yeah, the rubbernecking. Yeah. And,
yes.
And I sort of took a left turn from your original statement, Trish. I took a left turn because I just wanted to get that out. You were talking about Asperger's, and I, something you said triggered me to just bring up that's a real big stigma, that fear, and that my God, they're going to kill me. You know, I mean,
right?
Couldn't be further from the truth. So I sort of, you know, changed the conversation there on you a little bit.
That's good, because actually, what you just said also now triggered something in me, which is that. You are on the money, because most of what we see on a day-to-day, if we come across someone that we know has a challenge in their life, and I have seen it with T on occasion as he's growing up, and also his friends, it's just what it is, Joyce, is high anxiety. There was a movie called that at one point, but that's what it is. People are very anxious to the point where they're hypersensitive to the world and to themselves. And that's basically what it is, but people misconstrue that.
That's right.
To take that as a personal assault.
Correct. Correct. And because it's behavioral, people, again, they forget that it is a brain disease, just like you know, arrhythmia is a malfunction of the heart.
Yes.
Liver disease, you know, the brain's an organ, and it gets diseased, but it affects behavior. So that's why all the stigma, and it's so hard to separate it out. You know, it can be difficult, and that's why we just need to get more education, more funding, because the drugs, okay, they've made a lot of headway, but they're still pretty, I don't know, I'm not thrilled. I'm not thrilled with the antipsychotic drugs. Or the other drugs. I don't know what T takes for Asperger's. Is it a whole plethora of pharmaceuticals? I don't know much about
Joyce,
it.
I am proud to tell you that he has taken none through the years.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well,
yep.
Good for you. You've done something right. I mean, there's I'm not downing the drugs. I mean, meaning I don't. It's way better if you can do it without it. In my brother's case, he really needs them. He would be completely dysfunctional without them. So I'm not putting them down. I just think, like, remember cancer drugs from 20 years ago? Oh my goodness! I mean, when you look at the improvements made, we've got a lot more improvement to make. But when you look at, you know, the side effects, the, you know, kill the organism and you kill the cancer, and that's kind of how they used to be. They've made so much headway with antiviral drugs, like, you know, for AIDS and HIV.
Yes.
They've made so much progress, but with mental health, it's really lagging behind. So the drugs are still kind of archaic, in my opinion. I'm not a pharmacist or a doctor, obviously, and make no medical claims, but they're archaic. They have not made you know, when like 50 new drugs come out in other areas of health, as they should, you know, one or two are released for mental health. It's lagging behind, Trish.
Joyce, this could be a whole different show if we got into this topic, but
I know.
A homeopathic doctor, Dr. Reed, and she is so intent on finding a root cause for whatever it is that's going on in you.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, my gosh, because if you get to the root cause, and sometimes with these various challenges that we have, you know, we've learned through the years, for example, that with T and some of his friends, if we modify diet some, it's overnight.
Huge, 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 huge. Yeah, I'm so with you on all of that. That's my personal, what can I put?
Mantra?
That's my personal way, yes. always go naturally. That appeals to me most. I'm not the pharmaceuticals, just the side effects are, you know, they don't work in synchronicity with the body. Have you ever woken up and discovered your vocabulary was gone? That's what happened to me today. I had no vocabulary today. I woke up and someone took it. Humming and hawing and umming and I have no words today, guys. I got some thoughts in there, but I'm not spitting them out.
You are doing just fine. You are doing just fine.
The Grinch stole my vocabulary.
The Grinch!
Yeah, forget Christmas. He stole my damn vocabulary.
Well, you know what? I'm going to, for the time being, just put a pause in the heaviness of this topic because, Joyce, I can't hold it in anymore. I want to give you a little surprise this hour.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, go for it.
Now,
I love surprises.
Your Kelly, your assistant Kelly is so fabulous.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
And we have been talking back and forth, and by golly, I found a little something that I think that you want to hear this time of year.
Okay.
I don't really know a whole lot about Tim Hockenberry, but I know this.
Christmas by the Bay.
Christmas by the Bay, ladies and gentlemen.
Isn't that sweet? Doesn't he have a great kind of husky voice? It's so sweet.
It is.
And most people, don't know about that one. I want to let them know.
Well, you know what? Everybody's got a song. We have this crazy little song in Baltimore, and you have to understand that if you come to Baltimore, if you do not partake of some of the food here, you are out of your mind. You have to eat the food before you leave.
Yeah, it's fabulous food. Soft shell crabs, the blue, my
right.
Goodness.
And crab cakes. And crabs. I mean, we do the whole thing. You do the newspaper, and you have the crabs and the beer, and you go for it.
You got to realize my dad part of the time lived there, so I have relatives there, and we used to go crabbing. You just get anything like chicken or whatever, raw chicken, believe it or not, and you tie it on a string with weights. We used to tie little washers from and nuts and bolts on the end, and put it hang it down off the pier. And then when the crabs would come around, and then you just scoop them up with a net, and you have a crab feed that night. I know all about it. It's fabulous.
Yes, yes, you do. Well, David DuBois, who is this actor and spokesperson, a great advertising guy in town, has a big hit, and this is, sort of relative to Baltimore. Now, the name of the song, so I had to explain all of that to say the name of the song is Oh, I Want Crab. Right.
That was
so. Yeah, that was a build-up, and he does more accent. Oh, I want crabs for Christmas, and it's just so funny. So every region has its particular song, and apparently this is big in San Francisco, right, Joyce?
It is. It is. It's catching on, and it's funny that. The stations that flip and go 24/7 Christmas during the holidays,
yeah,
they played it a couple years because people just rattled their chain, and now they're back to just ones from big pop stars. And I just, I haven't heard it here on the radio, and I want to keep, you know, Tim and his band and this song, the writing of the song, they deserve recognition. And, you know, the holidays can get traditional regarding music, and unless you're a big, like, pop star, of course, which, you know, nobody in jazz is, they won't play it. They say, "Oh, we don't play music from people we don't know." So,
that's
you know
crazy.
What? Now I've got a chance to, and I don't know Tim personally at all, but I just loved his song. So, I'm glad that we're folks in Baltimore and all across the country are getting to hear his song now.
Well, this is just really sweet. I made it a point. I bought it on Amazon, and I'll have it forever now, Joyce, because of you.
You are so sweet. Tim would love that, too, I'm sure. I don't know him, but I hear he's a very nice guy.
Well, you're going to hear how nice his voice is, because, and this is the only interruption that we'll have with music while Joyce is on the phone with me, and we've got Jerry B., from Sound Doctrine, from Ohio. We've got Griselda Medina in Texas. The gang's all here. So is Tim Hockenberry. Christmas by the Bay. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. I love it.
The silver bells are ringing with each passing cable car. An Irish coffee greets us at the Buena Vista bar. The Golden Gate is glowing on this cool December night, and the city's highest towers shine like prisons wrapped in light. The fog's a memory to return again in May. It's Christmas by the bay, where the signs and the stars above are inviting us to stay. Yes, it's Christmas by the bay. Sparkles now as the carols start to play. It's Christmas by the bay. Candles glow and our hearts are light in the most familiar way. When the stores are decorated and the chill is in the air, we'll be holding hands together by the tree in Union Square. For it's Christmas by the bay, a time to celebrate in a San Francisco way. It's Christmas by the bay, I'm with you in my favorite place. My favorite holiday. San Francisco way. It's Christmas by the bay, I'm with you in my favorite place on my favorite holiday. Whoa. I'm with you in my favorite place on my favorite. Holiday.
just say, besides
yes,
the fact
please.
That that's Tim Hockenberry, that really is, and including the ding, ding.
I know, the little
end.
Cable car.
That is so cool.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking, you're right, you described his voice a certain way. Joyce, if these folks, Sasha Vasandani, Michael McDonald, Louis Armstrong, Jimmy Durante, and Tony Bennett got together and made a baby, it would sound just like him.
Woo! I wonder what he'd look like.
he's got
that husk in his voice. Beautiful. It's like that husky tenderness. Yeah, it's really heartfelt. Yeah, yeah, I love
it. It's precious.
It is. It's very romantic too. There's song. Uh huh.
Man, I want to go right to Ghirardelli Square.
Yeah.
Have some chocolate and some wine.
Yeah, there you go. Can't go wrong with that combo.
That's right. It has been such a long time since I've been in San Francisco. Oh, my God, what a memory that is. But you weren't always in San Francisco, right? I mean, you started off on the East Coast.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I was born in New Jersey and grew up between New Jersey and New York my whole life, pretty much. And
See,
it came out to San Francisco quite a while ago, though.
Go ahead, Griselda.
No, I wasn't. I mean, that was Joyce.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I thought you said, Griselda, I missed it. Did you used to live in San Francisco, too, or?
Oh, no, hon. I've always been, I'm a Texan through and through. So.
You're a Texas girl. All right. That's
Well, actually, when WSMJ was kicking in Baltimore, whenever we used to play you, which was frequently, by the way.
I know. You guys were awesome. You guys were really good to me.
Well, we just, I mean, you could actually be a mediator as far as music is concerned, going from one song to the other. It was always Joyce Cooling was the go-to artist to make the transition from one artist to another. Seriously.
Very cool. Very cool. Bridging gaps. Yeah.
And I used to call you my Jersey girl because I knew that you were from New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. Those are my roots. And still, my whole family is still back in Jersey, Manhattan, Queens, Long Island, and then upstate. But that's where my whole family is.
So
I'm
you were in Northern.
Yeah, I'm the only lone sheep out here on the West Coast.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but I go back often. I go back every 6 weeks. Something like that. Every 2 months, I'm back.
That's cool.
And I love it. There's my favorite Jersey story. Do we have time for me to digress?
Oh, my God, please.
For a Jersey holiday story? I love it. And no one would – see, this made my heart just, like, pang for New Jersey. I was out getting my mom – this was last Christmas. I was throwing a holiday party for my mom, inviting her friends over. And so I was doing shopping, et cetera, et cetera. So I went into a store, and I was getting my mom a new Christmas outfit. We were, you know, decking out the house and having fun. So I go in to a, you know, Jersey store there, and I'm picking up something for my mom. And behind the counter is, like, my favorite Jersey girl. She's got a pencil behind her ear, great big hair, tons of black eyeliner, the big lashes, and on the, you know, just, and the really long, she's adorable, right? And on the background music was Eartha Kitt's Santa Baby, right? Santa Baby. And she's singing along, so she's going, Santa Baby, da-da. Hold on, hon, I'll be right with you. Just hold on. With me. She knew every word. She went through the whole thing. I was howling. And then the phone would ring, coming down the Christmas. Hang on, hello. Okay, hon, bye. And she's singing the whole thing and ringing me up. It's like I got so homesick. I got so homesick. And she had on, like, the Christmas tree earrings that light up.
Of course.
And the wreath on her sweater. She was adorable. And I got so homesick. I just said, oh, my God, I need to come back here. So
see?
Then,
You just can't replace this stuff, and you try to explain it to people who don't understand, and they look at you like you're from another planet.
Was she chewing gum too, Joyce?
Oh, totally.
Of course.
That's part I forgot. And then, you know, popping and Sansa baby pop. She couldn't have been sweeter, and she was so warm and wonderful and a great, I mean, she was like a great service person. She took care of everybody answering phones and singing Sansa baby the whole time.
Oh, my
All
God.
Words, didn't miss a word, a syllable, nothing.
And see,
it's my girl.
There is really not a whole lot of difference between a girl in Jersey, a girl in Philly, and a girl in Baltimore. Can I just tell you?
Is it the truth?
I mean, in Baltimore, it's like, hey, hon, how you doing?
Yep. I just so much love poured out for that. And I had never met her, but I knew her. And she was so familiar to me, and it's you know, and I got horribly homesick. So, you know, that's the stuff. And I miss the diner culture.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Oh,
right?
See, now, Joyce, you just raised an important topic here, because what do you do in San Fran without those diners?
That part's hard. I mean, there are diners, but they're sort of imitations of the diners that I grew up in. And diners were sort of a melting pot. It was a meeting place. At the diner, of course, they're open all night, right? And they serve great, like, you can, you know, not particularly healthy food. You can, nowadays, you can be healthier, but, you know, shakes and that kind of thing. And everybody would meet there. You would see people dressed from head to toe in a gown coming from the opera. You would see kids coming from the mall. You would see all walks of life. Everybody met at the diner because it was open 24/7, and you could always get a cup of coffee.
Cup of coffee.
And it was just always lively, and you know, the being a waiter or a waitress is a fine art at a diner.
Oh yes.
Right, a good diner. And so, you know, our favorite diner was, you know, right on Route 4, right outside of Manhattan, and that was my favorite Jersey diner, and there you go.
Well, you know what? This is a holiday story. It just occurred to me because you mentioned diners, and an Extreme Home Makeover is going to go off the air after this season.
Really?
Yeah, because Ty Pennington is going to do something that's in the daytime that I think is a live, complete person makeover. He's with a series of people. I'm not sure what it's called, but one of the best stories. And Jerry B., I'm going to make sure you're part of this, because I know you're listening, and I know you're trying really hard to just listen, but I want you to be involved in this because this is so cool. There was a story, and it was, I believe, in Sussex County. There's only three counties in Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
One of these families was so awesome. They didn't have very much themselves, but what they had, they wanted to give to the community. So the wife opened up a soup kitchen.
Gotta love her, right?
Oh, and it gets better. It gets better because she had all of these people, and, you know, Delaware is kind of one of those tricky states, and you'll see where I'm going in a second, because Mason-Dixon line and, you know, in the days of Jim Crow, maybe half and half about how folks felt about racial relationships at that point in time. One of the guys on the staff at Extreme Home Makeover found out that the husband of this extraordinary lady was equally as extraordinary because of the fact that he worked three jobs in order for his wife to keep on with the soup kitchen.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So they had this family.
That's a real saint.
They were living among us.
It's not a big
problem. Oh, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
They were living in poverty almost, and they didn't, you know, reaching out you know how the scenario develops. People are looking at whether they're going to take this family or not. They're looking on the bus. There's not a dry eye of the folks who are part of the show looking at this film. Everybody's crying.
Yeah.
And one of the things is this. The husband has such a disposition. He has such love in his heart for everybody. He started to talk about the fact that when he was growing up, he loved diners. But,
okay, here's the tie-in.
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh. He was not able to go into the diner because he was black.
Oh, God. Ugh.
So,
makes your heart fall to the ground. Just
right. So, he would look in the windows, and he would love what they looked like, and he knew that the food was good. And they heard the story, and one of the guys in particular just fell. He just fell out crying. By the time all was said and done, Extreme Home Makeover, one of the guys, that guy who had cried the hardest, had taken it on that they would build a house with an extra place for a soup kitchen, fully stocked, custom-made kitchen.
Oh,
but for the husband, they built him his own room that was a diner.
Oh, so cool.
Oh, sweet.
That is so cool. That is
wonderful. And then what he said when he saw that was, he said, everybody is welcome at my diner for always.
Yeah, that's as it should be. And I love to get the diners that I went to, you know, was way past that. So you saw everybody. Everybody, you know, races, color,
fabulous.
Ages, old people, kids. I mean, it was just a cross section of America. But back when, I don't know when he was telling that story, what year was he referring to? All that?
Well, you know, in Delaware, look, having lived there just, you know, some years ago, it was pretty iffy because I remember the election of 2000.
You're talking that late.
Oh, no. But, I mean, people in Sussex County where I was living, you could just imagine. I think that he's a man who's in his 60s, so you can do the math from there.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So he was a little guy.
Yeah.
And he remembers that.
Isn't that funny?
So, yeah.
It's funny that you bring up that you connected, like, my kind of silly diner to something really poignant like that. But diners, it's a funny thing. Diners are kind of like that. They're a palm print of stuff. They're such a – diners are a real entity in and of themselves, aren't they? And it's not – everybody goes, okay, yeah, it's just a place to get food that's late at night.
But oh, no.
More than that.
No.
It's a meeting place. It's kind of – maybe cafes are taking that over a little bit, you think? Are cafes taking over that function that diners used to have, except they're not open all night?
Yeah, but Joyce, you know what? The cafes are upscale. The reason why we love diners so much, in our experience anyway, is because they were so blue-collar, essentially.
Yeah. They were people's places.
Yes.
People's hangouts. Yeah. Yeah, but yet you would see, like I said, you would see people coming home from the opera. You know?
Yeah.
All dressed up.
But they knew that when they were coming from the opera, they were coming into territory that wasn't necessarily their own. And they respected that.
I guess so. But that's what I loved about that. You never knew what you were going to see at the diner. It was everybody all the time.
Oh, my God. And, oh boy, we are waxing poetic about diners.
I'm going to have to write a song about diners. Like the entity that they are.
Look, you know what? There is a group of diners in this region, and for some reason, this Greek family knows how to run these diners so well. Oh, my God.
Do they have them out here?
You know what? I don't think so. But, my gosh, everything is just so, including a case of desserts before you leave.
Oh, those dessert cases are a bomb. Man, I don't care what kind of diet you're on. You're not, you know, you're just, like... You know what's so funny. This will tell it all. There's one out here, and it's actually, you know, good. It's called, I don't remember, Fog City Diner or something like that. But they serve oysters. Oysters don't belong at a diner.
No.
Big dessert cakes. You know, like those big giant cakes that are covered with coconut? That belongs at a diner.
Yes.
You know those.
Yes.
You know?
And look, it doesn't matter who of, you know, what kind of culture is running the diner, you got to have cannoli.
Oh, my God. You got to have cannoli.
Oh, please. You don't have a diner if you don't have cannoli.
Oh, we do.
Oh,
God. See, like some of my, I have some friends and cousins that I, you know, grew up with that talk like this. You know, that could have been the godfather. And we'd be hunched over cannoli and coffee, just talking all night. I swear, that's what I came from.
And look, if things got a little contentious, or if somebody comes in through the diner and there's a little bit of a staring competition, how often did you hear, "What are you looking at?"
Oh, you gotta love it. See, that's definitely the whole thing. You guys, because I really do love it all. I love it all. I love the richness of all of it. I wouldn't want to have to get rid of any aspect of that. And I think, you know, as human beings, we're all like that. We're made up of many facets of many things. And, you know, they all kind of, you know, blend into this big potpourri or this big, you know, soup of what we are. And so, you know, I love a cafe, and I love the opera, and I love my diners, and I love,
right,
you know, I really kind of get into all of it. So I wouldn't want to, you know,
well,
discard any of it. Yeah.
You're essentially saying, and this is why you're such a good spokesperson for NAMI, you know, people, all colors, all ages, all shapes, all sizes, all religions, you just love people. And you get affected. It's really interesting how you are being used, Joyce, because here is your brother who has this mental challenge that he has lived with. And because of what you have done to take the gauntlet and run, how many people have you positively affected and maybe saved some lives that you are going to see as time unfolds that you've saved because of what you're doing?
I just don't know. I just, you know, it's a small little, you know, it's just a little thing that we're doing. I mean, we're not, I hear you, Trish. Again, my vocabulary has run off to the other room. But hopefully, yeah, you're right. I mean, when somebody, sometimes you do a little thing and you have no idea how far the repercussions can travel. And, you know, if you could have helped someone in some way, that's beautiful. That's what it's about, as other people have helped me in ways that they know nothing about. It's funny. Sometimes someone will say something to you, or some random act of kindness, someone will do something for you or open a door for you that they have no idea that they've opened, or they have no idea the profound effect that something they did or said affected your life. So I think, you know, if we think of ourselves as people, as powerful beings, meaning able to affect people in very small ways but in very profound ways, then the whole idea of doing something to make things better, how far that reaches. I mean, you just have no idea. I'm not doing a good job of explaining it, but
no, I think you're right, because
you're getting
it.
Thank you.
I've heard it said this way, and this will help your language get ran off.
Yeah, I'm having a struggling over here.
You're
Jerry,
fine.
Help me out.
But
go ahead.
It's being. If we concentrate on being, then doing really takes care of itself, because that's what's in your heart. That person you are, you can be that, and then the doing, the action, that it just trickles down and takes care of itself.
Bingo.
So
thank you. Yes.
We're not doing doing, you know?
Yes. That's it.
Well, look, nothing could be more important than making people aware that they are not alone in this world. Many people that we have come across, especially I'm finding in the past year or so, as we really do embrace the notion that things will change, things are getting better, but things have been a struggle, not only financially, not only physically for people, because of the financial circumstances, and those two affect emotional and mental situations greatly.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, not to take advantage of the information in front of you, and now that you have mentioned a couple of things this hour, Joyce, I think that NAMI on its website has how-to scenarios of how you can help people who cannot or will not help themselves.
Absolutely. NAMI and Fellowship Health Resources, both of them get into that. And, you know, it can be as simple as sometimes, you know, this whole random act of kindness thing, sometimes a small little act like that, again, can have those huge repercussions and can really help people. Maybe it's, you know, I'm making this up. Maybe it's volunteering a little time at your, you know, your city soup kitchen, or you know what we do, and I'm bringing this up not to sound like, oh, what a nice person you are. This is just a thing that turned into a celebration where we get together and we just go deliver socks to the homeless people at Christmas time. And then afterward, we all have a big dinner and we, you know, we have a ball and we make a party out of it. But we get together as a group and we do it. You know,
Yeah. Little
things like that, it's not a big deal. It's just, you know, just gather something and then somebody feels that somebody cares about them. And that makes a difference in their life. And it makes you feel good, too. I mean, it's not just all giving. I mean, you get so much out of it, too. You know, little ways that you can hang out with your friends, like little rituals you can have, like maybe such and such a time of year, maybe you go with a few pals and you do something nice for somebody, and then you make sure that you go out and you celebrate after it so that it becomes sort of a ritual. And those things kind of grow and become celebrations all throughout the year, and yet you're turning a good turn for somebody else.
And one of the big things that Norman Woods was with us not that long ago. Oh my gosh, what an impact he made, because Norman's other name is Inside. He's a jazz poet, and actually he's in your neck of the woods, Joyce. He very familiar with your work, and he has actually done films not only about his story, and his story is remarkable because he was homeless at one point, and he not only lived to tell the tale, but now it's his absolute mission to talk to people who want to end their lives by giving them the opportunity to talk about what it is that they need to change their minds.
Right.
He's amazing.
Oh, that's beautiful. Wow.
He is beautiful. And what he said was, oh, this is so crucial. The best thing that you can do this holiday season as you're out and about, he said, it's important that when you're passing somebody who's homeless, and chances are they are going through some quandaries as far as their mental health is concerned,
Don't look
away.
Yeah.
Look them in the face and give them a kind look. Give them a smile.
Mm-hmm.
Give them something that they can use so that it sticks in them to make them want to live.
Exactly. What's
that really?
Jerry, I didn't hear. Jerry said something. I didn't hear what he said.
That's very good.
Yes. It means everything, because we go by people sometimes and we feel as if it's going to be a cancer that gets spread to us.
Yeah. See, and you have to be intentional about that, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. Whomever you're seeing on the street, whether they're laying there outside of a building, whether they're sitting out there wandering aimlessly, if there is an opportunity for eye contact, I mean, the thing that separates us is fear. But if you smile, if you nod your head, if you look in their direction, you're right. It changes. It deposits something into their spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. we have to stop being so scared. That's ridiculous.
Well, and again, you know, the ridiculousness, yes, it is ridiculous, but it comes from ignorance, not stupidity, and it comes from us not wanting to talk about mental health or, or you know, as a society. So, again, I don't want to chastise people for not knowing about this or for being scared. I mean, if you don't know, you know, you can be a little frightened or if it's not something that you're used to dealing with. I remember the very first time I went into a mental institution with my brother, I was scared.
Yeah.
I was scared. I was a kid, and it was scary. And there were people that were scary. You know, I didn't know any better. Now, I obviously, that's not what it is, but I was ignorant. I didn't know. It was his first break and around that. And before that, you know, I'll just come out and say this because he had no trouble. I asked him ahead of time what I may disclose about his life and what I may not, and he said, go for it all. If it helps somebody, go for it all. But he had a horrible heroin addiction before the psychotic break. You know, it was sort of the precursor to what was going on. And he was living in some very rough places in, you know, upper Manhattan and very funky places. And again, you know, I was always going with him to halfway houses and things like that and meetings as he was trying to get straight and all this. And it, you do, at first, that was scary too. As a kid, you see a lot of people coming off of addictions, and again, which is a form of mental illness. Severe addiction is mental illness. Severe. I don't mean, you know, a person that has an extra cup of coffee or something. I mean severe addictions. That's mental illness, too. It is frightening. So I don't want people to feel stupid or like they're being our society has set it up so that we – has not made, let's put it this way, our society and our government and everything around has not made it easy for us to understand people struggling with mental issues. Let's put it that way. So I don't want anyone to feel stupid or anything like that.
Well, it's just we really need to – this seems to be one of these years. 2012, we really need to be forthright about how we march into this year with added positivity and strength because we have – there's so many of us who are serene and who are blessed with a sense of trying to help other people. And we know that there are others who struggle with negativity so much. You just want to reel in those people because there's a lot of people who are half-empty people walking around, you know, spewing negativity. We really need to lasso that positivity into 2012 and take it in there and make sure that we realize it's our responsibility to take care of one another.
You know what? That's a beautiful way to put it. And on a positive note, Trish, that's so perfect. I can see your vocabulary didn't escape you today. But but on a positive note, too, that's why we wanted to do this Music for the Mind thing. And we wanted to raise awareness and money for mental health, but we wanted to have a good time doing it. So we thought, what a better way than to play music or to have music and take the heaviness out of mental health. I mean, a lot of times you talk about mental health in hushed tones because it's also heavy and dark and all that. And
yes,
you're right. And it is. It's serious, like any serious illness. But sort of in line with what you were saying about, you know, the half-empty people and sort of turning that around and harnessing positivity, that's what we wanted to do with Music for the Mind. We wanted to make a fun event out of doing something cool. And, you know, and that's why we were saying if you go out and deliver socks to the homeless or visit someone in whatever it is, turn it around, you know, make it a positive thing so that it's always got a positive light on it. And if you have a choice, you know how sometimes in your mind you have a choice of sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm just out of control and I just react to a situation. But oftentimes I find I just pause a second that I have a choice. Do I want to go negative with this and you know, get all uptight and find the negative side of situation, or do I want to spin it positively? And if even just that little switch in your thought process can switch it to the positive, you have, again, those small little things have huge repercussions. Just that little thing. And I know I sound like Northern California.
No, you are actually describing, for lack of a better terminology, the butterfly effect.
The butterfly effect. I don't know what that is.
That was actually a book, and then it was made into a movie. And actually, it's so fascinating, Joyce. You would love this more than most people because it actually does state that for whatever you do in a given day, it has repercussions for not only you, but for everything and everyone around you.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. You can't, you know, I really do believe that whole bit about, you know, a thought is an entity. It's a measured thing.
Right.
It's a measured thing. And just like I think we were talking about this last time, you dump something off the shores of wherever, off of Australia, it's just a matter of minutes before it's up and washing up on your beach in your neighborhood. You know, the world and people are absolutely connected. It's a global thing. And a thought fits in there, too. A thought is a physical, measurable entity. And now I really sound like a Northern Californian. But I think the nature of our thoughts really affects everyone, even if it's in the teeny tiniest little, you know, fraction of a molecule. It affects everybody. Everybody. I think that's how powerful things are. So, you know,
well,
there are gross examples of, you know, pollution. You know, you dump, okay, the radioactivity in Japan, that horrible disaster. But that has affected the world. There is not, on a physical level, there is not one place on the planet now that probably doesn't have some little, tiny little smidgen of that spill in the environment. Even some places might be just like a speck, almost immeasurable, but it's there. As it is with thoughts, they're just more, they're not as dense physically. They're just, but I think that thoughts and actions, you know.
Oh, there is a huge thing like emotional pollution, to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it's critical that folks harness their negativity, because honestly, just last night we were talking about this. We actually took a cab ride from the hotel to the club where we went because it was a big jam and there was lots of musicians that were getting together. And we heard this story about a friend of a friend and how this person keeps attracting the negativity to her life. She just allows the bad things to take a domino effect. Just as the negative can do that, the positive can too. So that's the gift that we can all give one another in 2012, to make sure the positive thoughts have a domino effect for you and for everybody else around you.
You know, I know what you're saying, and Trish, I just have to interject this because I struggle with knowing the difference. I still don't know how much we bring upon ourselves and how much happens. I'm not saying one way or the other. I just don't know.
I hear you.
Are you?
Here's the thing. I'm finding out that there's a lot of people who view themselves as victims.
Mm-hmm.
And it's needless. It's needless to think of yourself that way. Sometimes I think that people bask in the victimization of their lives. And
oh,
those are the kind of, those are the kind of people I'm talking about. But when you keep, you know, when people keep talking about the negatives, it actually, I know it because I've seen it happen. It compounds itself. Conversely, if you keep talking about positives, more of the positive things seem to happen to you.
Mm-hmm. No, I do believe that. I do.
And I know, look, I'm, trust me, go back to September 11th, 2001. What happened on that day, no one could foresee, no one brought it on themselves. it was just one of those situations. I believe we're going to find out why when we die.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Do you ever see, like, something, like when something horrible happens to, like, a child? You know, they're too young to have.
Right.
I got to be honest with you. I don't understand it. I don't. And I
no.
I,
and we have Jerry B. here, who is an ordained minister, and I know that he is just chomping at the bit.
Jerry, please.
I'm not at all chomping at the bit. I am listening. You know, and there are actually some things that we cannot answer. You know, there is evil in the world. Evil exists, and people make choices. And some of them choose to do wrong and to do things that destroy, you know, with the spirit that is inside of them. And so, you know, there's no, in a situation like a 9/11 or any type of bomb or any type of child abuse that happens, there's pity-pat or patty-cake answer that you can just go to scripture and verse and say, yeah, that's it. That's the answer right there.
No, it's too deep, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We don't understand, but what we choose to do, and I think I don't know which one of you. I think it was Joyce, you know, who said it best. I mean, the one thing that we do is those of us who have a positive spirit, those of us who believe in a higher power, and those of us who espouse a certain system of faith. You know, we make sure that we rally around those who have been victimized. Now, I agree with Trish. In the sense that, you know, to have a victim mentality is absolutely wrong. But when someone has been truly victimized, then we who know God and who have a positive outlook, we rally around them and show them that, you know, from this tragedy, there can be something good that happens because we will make it be so.
Yes. Yeah, and that is in our power. To with something bad to make it turn well. And Trish, I know exactly what you're saying, what Jerry just was saying about, you know, there is a victim mentality that's almost like a coat that you put on. You know, it's like a garment that you wear that sort of, and the more you wallow in it and talk about it and give it energy, the more it perpetuates itself. And so,
oh
woe is me. And I do know what you're, I do know that.
I just left somebody last night. And I just love this person so much, but I see that whatever happens, he then turns it around, and it's an opportunity to say, "See, I told you."
Yes, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
you know, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, you know, I was going to say that's where, you know, you step in, Trish, and I've seen you do it, you know, in person, you know, where someone has made a negative statement and you say, but look at the other side of it.
That's, you know, that's why God made Pollyanna. tomorrow.
Yes, my dear.
I don't want to be, you know, stereotypical as a minister or a pastor to say, well, you know, we're always present with the right answer, because we're not, you know, and there are many times where we say, wow, God, what happened there, you know, but he's not asleep at the wheel, you know, he's just giving you and I choices, and there are some things that I do that I don't understand.
Oh, me too, Jerry.
Oh boy, me too. I've got my hand up in the air. Jerry, my hand's up in the air, ready to be tagged. I don't understand some of the things I do.
Well, yeah, look, what? Joyce, there are some things I don't understand what Jerry does. I mean,
busted, you know, Jerry, you're busted.
Yeah, now my hand is up in the air too. And
Joyce, we have kept you. God bless you. And here we are. We've got about 10 more minutes. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go, and I want to make sure everything that you need to know about what Joyce is doing for NAMI and for also actually two organizations that she is really, really in love with that have just changed her world because of her circumstances in her past many years. NAMI and FHR, Fellowship Health Resources. You can find out everything at joycecooling.com.
Thank you, Trish. You just said it so eloquently, and I wish the two of you could have spoken for me today. And now I'm going to go on a search for that vocabulary.
No.
It's been a ball talking to you, really. And Griselda, thank you so much for remembering me and coming online or on phone and talking with us. And I just appreciate all of you and wish all of you just a wonderful holiday, great new year, and I think wonderful things are in store for 2012 for all of us. I really do.
Yes. Sister Cooling, we receive that.
Thank you guys
absolutely.
So much.
Thank you so much, Joyce.
Take care.
Thank
you,
Joyce. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yes. Great. Yay. Oh, my goodness. We didn't really expect Joyce to stick around that long, but shoot, I'm so glad she did.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Well, listen, Jerry, can you hang out just a few minutes longer? Griselda, huh?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I want Jerry to do something important after the song, but it behooves me to play this song by Joyce Cooling because this is how cool she is. All proceeds for this song go to her two organizations that I just named. So this is something, if you're going to buy something for somebody, buy the gift of song, and you can go to joycecooling.com and do just that. You know Joyce as a guitarist. Here she is singing It's Feeling Like Christmas on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Feeling like Christmas. Feeling like Christmas, the leaves have gone, a chill is in the air. It's feeling like Christmas, feeling like Christmas, the lights are bright and shining everywhere. People greet and families meet, and longtime friends are near. Of holiday cheer, year after year, it's feeling like Christmas, feeling just like Christmas. A kindly thought, a friendly word go far. Falling snow and mistletoe bring back memories. Merry Christmas, a merry, merry Christmas. It's feeling like Christmas time. It's feeling like Christmas time. Story told by young and old, a time for one and all. Things can always be this way, a good thought will stay day after day. It's feeling like Christmas, feeling like Christmas. A kindly thought, a friendly word go far. Child's sleigh and gingerbread bring back memories, but what really, really matters is to have a Merry Christmas, a Merry, Merry Christmas. It's feeling like Christmas time. It's feeling like Christmas time. Thank you.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Oh, that's a cool song.
Isn't that a cool song?
Yes.
That's fabulous.
Now, look, I want you to know I was half a second from segueing right from that into yours truly and my interpretation of Santa Baby from 1990.
That's a great cut, Trish. You know, I got your Facebook message on that, and I was pleasantly surprised. I really thought it was going to be a parody. You Can Rock.
Well, I did it last night at the club. I wasn't rocking, unfortunately, because I couldn't hear myself and the band. And, look, it's all right. But, you know, Joyce mentioned Eartha Kitt's version of Santa Baby, and I went, oh, my gosh, if she only knew that I had that queued up and ready to go. Oh, but I don't want to leave on that note. I wanted to leave on a note where it made more sense, especially in light of what we were talking about. And to take this a step further, Jerry, I'm really glad that you're here, because I hadn't thought about this until we all got involved in the conversation about mental illness and people feeling alone. And actually, I would like you, if you would, to first of all tell us anything that you want to say about Sound Doctrine and the coming year. Tell us anything that you'd like to say, first of all.
Well, first of all, just visit sounddoctrine.com. We are editing a video newsletter that even while we speak, putting the finishing touches on it, so you will be able to see me say everything that needs to be said about Sound Doctrine. It is only going out to subscribers, so you have to go to sounddoctrine.com, become a member, and you will get this end of the letter or end of the year newsletter, so to speak, video newsletter. And so do that, and you'll get the information.
Wonderful. All right. Well, now I'm going to present this opportunity to you. Griselda is here, and I'm here, and there are folks listening. There will be folks who are going to be listening in archive mode. Could you say a prayer for us for Christmas?
Absolutely.
Certainly.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Absolutely.
Well, Father, we thank you because you're always good. You're always kind. You're all-knowing. And as we were talking in conversation earlier, you know us better than we know ourselves. You created us. And, Father, what we wish to see happen is peace to come into this world, to remain in this world, and that we would meet individually and corporately the Prince of Peace. We thank you, Father, that the world pauses at the end of the year to acknowledge the Savior's birth. In all of our belief systems, various belief systems of even this audience who's out there, the one thing is true is that you so loved the world that you gave your only begotten Son, that whosoever would disbelieve in him would not perish but have everlasting life. And we do know, Lord, as we read the scriptures, that Jesus said, not only did I come to give you life, but I came that you might have life more abundantly. And so I pray, Father, as we end this year, 2011, there's been joy, there's been pain, there's been heartache and sorrow, but there has been, Father God, great goodwill toward men. And we see people from all walks of life who have your spirit, who are on a mission to make sure that their fellow man is cared for, as Trish mentioned earlier. Well, Father, as this new year dawns upon us, we pray for more of your spirit. We pray that we would be able to represent you well. We pray that in our own sphere of influence, Lord, that we would be the change that we want to see in the world. We ask these things in your Son, Jesus' name.
God bless you.
Amen to that.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Jerry. I really wanted that to happen before the end of the show. And we're getting out just in time, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, thank God for that extra 30 minutes he attached to the Blog Talk Radio. Well, Griselda, thank you so much. Now, this is great. Now, if you want to make this a steady thing, you can do this so that you can listen to the show.
I might have to if my computer keeps acting up.
I need to say to Griselda real quick. that you have to Facebook me because I did not receive your mailing address from Joy.
From Joy?
Oh.
Okay, yes, I will do that once I get my computer back up and running. Yes, I will.
Griselda, you can mail it to me on my AOL account, and I'll mail it to Jerry.
Okay.
Excellent.
Okay,
all
that's
right.
Great.
I will do that.
I want to keep my promise, so, you know, I'm one day late. I want to keep my promise.
That's okay. As long as I get it, hon, it doesn't matter if it's after Christmas. Just as long as I get the music. That's all I care about.
All right. Well, we've got 60 seconds, and I thank you, Griselda. I thank you, Jerry B., with all my heart. You know I love you both. Thanks, Jerry, for being here from the start. And have a Merry Christmas, both of you.
Merry Christmas to you both.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
God bless us, everyone. Thank you so much for being there, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Have a merry, safe, and a very blessed Christmas. Thank you so much.